Okay, so some of the questions that we have is like preparation and then creating your pitch. How do you find your targets? What does the actual pitch look like? A measurement. How do you determine success? How do you track it? And I know that you and I have had some differences in the past of things like I, as soon as you give me all the press I'm so excited about, I want to post all over the whole website. But you have other comments like, don't you dare. I'm not through with my campaign. Okay, so I'll ask you some questions about that. And that some of the others, what we did is we just did a free form. We were just asking ourselves, what are the kind of questions? What's the practical, gutsy type stuff that Mackenzie can do to just sort of get in there and get some results for us? And Mackenzie also say hello. Mackenzie?
Hi.
Hi, Mackenzie.
Yeah, she's
Hi, how are you?
she's the one that sounds really young because she is really young.
Okay. Well, but, we were all young once, eons ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, I was young about 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't we start at the top up here, and then some other things, just sort of see the, and then also what I did is you gave me a document which I post on my website for other people in the PR, Master in the Media, What to Do When the Media Comes Calling. Mm-hmm. So you sent me that article a long time ago, and then it's, you know,
long time ago, yeah.
Sitting on my website.
Okay.
And so over here, what you could see is that we've got quite a lot of stuff that we're trying to do with the press. You know, we've got reactive press, we've got proactive press, press releases, creating the press release, creating the associated, and then there's call Todd to see how he pitches. How does the master actually do this stuff and get results? Mm-hmm. And then industry consultants, analysts, you know, how to find the top 25 influencers, you know, the ghost articles, you know, using Haro, all that kind of stuff too. So this is generally our PR plan of action. And then here's our master databases, trying to put it all together and everything else. So you can see we're in the foray as I'm transferring this information over to Mackenzie and having her work through this. Just so you know, the product category is we've got online business valuation. And what we do is we help financial planners to create leads. And one of the unique ways we do this is we give them a tool. They actually subscribe to the tool, but then they have unlimited use to it, where they can do free business valuations for small businesses, small and medium businesses.
So these are financial planners going after businesses, not necessarily individuals.
Correct. They're going after the owners of the business.
Owners, okay.
As a way for them to do an introduction. And for example, my brother-in-law, he's a financial planner. And so when he was first trying to get my business after one of my bigger acquisitions, he sent me a book. You know, he asked me a series of questions, sent me an actual bound book with my name on it, looked all official and everything else. He sent that as sort of all the different things that they would be able to do based on what he found. I thought that was really, really clever. But the one thing for small business owners, you know, a big chunk of those will try to use their business as part of their retirement. And you know, the way to earn their wealth. And yet most valuation professionals don't know how to assess how much of their retirement that would actually be. If it's used for retirement.
Let me just jump in here really quick.
I know, David, I just want to cover this for a second, get right into our question.
Okay.
Yeah. The only other thing over there too is we've also got something else called an effectiveness score, where even if they're not looking at retirement, the process that we take can show them effectiveness score comparing their business to the sale of actual businesses in their area. And then if their business rates lower, that would show how effective they are. And that would show if there's holes in a financial planner. So there's essentially the angle that we're taking for this.
Okay.
Okay. And now we've got a pitch. It's something brand new for the entire industry. You know, they're used to valuation, sort of boring, you know, so it's a new approach. That we've really worked hard to get the positioning down on this and even testing it with the financial, you know, advisors and everything else. So.
And nobody else is doing this? This is something nobody else is doing?
Nobody else is doing this.
Okay. Well, BizEquity is doing this, right?
Well, BizEquity was doing this, but they were using it strictly for when you retire. We look at the overall market of when people are retiring. There might be maybe, I don't know, 10% of the market that's actually at the stage of retiring. So we needed to find something for a bigger market segment. So the effectiveness score is something that is for a bigger market segment And that is, that's something we discovered through this process. We also call this effectiveness score. It's like the blood pressure for businesses. It's like one singular test that you could do, this one here, that would tell you if your blood pressure is in a normal range, you're fine. Just continue on what you're doing. If it's low, like if your valuation score is low, then that means there's trouble, and that's worth looking into, just like with blood pressure.
Okay.
So we've got some analogies very similar to that.
Sure. Let me say two quick things. One, we own the largest database of business comparables, which is also sort of tied to this. And the other thing we're pitching to is not just financial advisors and financial press, but business owner press and general business press with a slightly different twist. For financial planners, we're saying it's a hook to get a lead. For business owners, we're saying, you know, it's important to know your value, but what's more compelling is to know how effective you are, because most of you are not selling anytime soon.
Okay.
And if your score is ineffective, just like a blood pressure test, then it's one of the fastest indicators that you're leaving money all over the table. Okay. So now, what is your process to prepare for a campaign?
Okay, so where we stand when things come to be, you know, right in the front door, just like we are right now, and we're doing this initial evaluation, an initial kind of consultation, if you will, we do almost a client interview type thing, where just like the media would do the interview. I'm a former media guy, so I put myself back in the media chair and say, okay, if this business, this entrepreneur, this news peg came across my desk, would I feature it? Why or why not? Kind of thing. And so it's kind of on the client education curve, I call it, just educating myself about what the client is and does and what their news pegs are. And you'll hear me say news peg a lot. And basically what that is, that's a news hook. That's what the media are looking for. That's the reason they do the story. So if you can get a media person a news peg that they would, this is something I think my readers and viewers and blog followers, whatever, would be interested in, that's what they're looking for. So they're looking for story ideas / news pegs / pitch points, that type of thing. So you'll hear me say that throughout this more than once, I'm sure. So when we're in the throes of right now, kind of the client education curve for me, the PR person, or you as you're doing it, what we need to do is come up with what makes this something clearly that the media would be interested in. What's their, you know, why should they give two shakes about what we're telling them, kind of thing. So I always say, you know, the best way to get media exposure is to make the media's job as easy as possible. So if we can pitch to them and kind of spoon feed them as to why would your audience care about this type of thing? What they care about in a lot of situations, for the media to cover something, in one of the biggest ones, new is news for the media. So if you're launching something that nobody else is doing, that's what's interesting. That's why I asked earlier, now, is this new? And is anybody else doing it? That's what they're looking for, because as you might imagine, they get pitched by literally thousands of other, not only PR people, but, marketing departments and individuals and things like that. So we have to kind of bust through the din of the thousands of other media pitches that are being, peppered their way. What I always say we need to come up with is, my media contacts tell me, or this is kind of what I've said over the years, but they're not looking for horses, they're not looking for zebras, they're looking for unicorns. And so what we need to do is we need to play up your unicorn factor. What is your unicorn factor? What makes you unique and novel and therefore newsworthy and news peggy, kind of thing? So that's what we need to play up here. What makes you, that's why I asked earlier too, is there anybody else doing this kind of thing? So if it isn't, if you guys are the only ones that are doing this, or you're doing it in a kind of a twist, that makes it newsworthy, that's what the media are looking for. They don't care how great you are. They don't care that you made $100 billion in sales last year. They don't care that you've been ranked number one for the last 256 years. They care about why would my readers or viewers, I want to put together a story that's going to entice, educate, and entertain my audience, whether it's a blog post, a radio show, a TV show, a magazine article, whatever. So that's what we need to come up with is what, in that media messaging, play up here's something we think your audience would like, and here's why. Very tight, very succinct, very concise. You know, here's the topic. Here's, you know, some bullet points as to why it's interesting. Maybe some data that makes it relevant, and kind of makes it kind of proves to the point that here's why this is interesting. And then, you know, links to whether it's, you know, the website or something like that, so that they can click on it and say, hey, this is interesting. And then come back and say, can I get some additional information on this kind of thing? So on the front end, that's a long-winded way of saying that's kind of what we do, where we are right now. Educate myself about what the media might be looking for in the client, play up their unicorn factor, you know, pull in those things that, because they, what we don't want and what happens as a media person, you get pitched by, you know, a million people, and you, what you don't want is, man, I just covered this last week. You know, I covered a company doing the exact same thing last week, or this isn't anything new. I get pitches from, you know, people, companies doing this exact same thing, you know, over and over again. This isn't new. You know, I need news. What's newsworthy? So that's why we need to come up with something that, and you do a little research beforehand to see what your competitors have done, or to make sure that what you have is indeed new. We don't want to make a pitch to the media and say, nobody else is doing this, and then my guy at the Wall Street Journal says, yeah, they are. I've written this story four times kind of thing. So we need to make sure that what we're telling the media is unique and newsworthy. And that's the basis of what they cover. They're looking for news. And so we need to kind of spoon feed it to them. So on the front end, that's what we're looking for, in the process of preparing the campaign. It's fleshing out those news pegs and that unicorn factor, and then that helps us to, you know, form the media messaging, and quite frankly, it helps us in the media market research too. If we know that, okay, the angle is going to be this specific, you know, topic, then we go after the media that cover that topic, and we'll go in and research the, you know, Business Insider and find those couple of reporters or editors that cover that they're interested in this topic and go from there. So on the front end, that's what we do, is just educate ourselves on about what it is, and then come up with the media messaging and media market research from there.
Okay. Now, I noticed that you, for example, we have a press release, and usually, yep. I think you usually use that as sort of at least a baseline to start with, and then you create a pitch. Tell us about this pitch that you create.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, since we worked together last, Ted, I know it's been a little while, but anymore these days, believe it or not, you know, we used to, you know, 24 years ago, 25 years ago when I started the business, everybody wrote a press release, and it's, you know, 400 to 500 words, and sometimes companies want to put together a 1300 word press release that's going to make a reporter's eyes bleed kind of thing. But anymore these days, what the media are looking for, to be quite frank, a release of 500 words is more than a media person is going to look at on a first basis kind of thing. That's why I keep saying media messaging and media pitch paragraph is basically what it is. And so we can put together a press release kind of thing, as maybe press releases are almost secondary these days within the media message pitching, because we'll put together something that's, the stuff that I send out anymore these days is a 200-word media message. Hey, Joe, from, you know, the Chicago Tribune, here's something I think your audience would like. Here's why. Boom, boom, boom. Like I said before, bullet points if we need to. Just setting it up really, really quickly and concisely, and then letting them know in no uncertain terms that we can get them reams of additional information, or here's a click, you know, click on this to take you to a page of additional information or something like that. But if you send a media person these days who have the attention span of a gnat, and if you don't catch them in the first, you know, 30 or 40 words kind of thing, they got 700 other press, you know, media pitches to go through and go from there. So when you're asking about the press release, I'm not anti-press release, because I think they're definitely beneficial, especially when you're putting something out, maybe for SEO services or something like that. But for the actual media pitching and the what I call direct pitching of the media, a media message that's really, like I said before, tight and concise, that's here's something that's of interest, and then And I've heard from media people before that if I have to scroll, your pitch is too big. I don't want to go to, I want to see in the first three or four sentences, why would I cover this? Why or why not? You know, kind of thing. And then now, and again, like I said before, we can say, let them know that we can get you lots of more information. But for right now, here's an idea. How can I make your job easier? How can I get you additional information? And then that's also a nice way to kind of get a qualified lead too. That way they'll respond and say, hey, I got your pitch. That's interesting. I'm in the weeds right now. I'm 6 weeks out from even looking at another story, but I do like this thing. Can you circle back with me in a month or something? Or they'll say, I like this. I'm going to run this by my editor at our next production meeting or something like that and go from there. So to answer your question about a press release, we can have the press release kind of in the back. If we might not even use the press release, quite frankly, because
because I understood you don't use press releases, but essentially we were looking at a press release as a way for us to sort of succinctly get our story together and from there create the pitch. Because sure, I would sure. look at that as sort of a foundational piece. Okay, that's got the who, what, where, when, how, all that. From there,
sometimes I'll put together something that says, "Here's in the media pitch." I can say, "Below is a release, that of this venture that we have going." But in the pitch paragraph, it needs to stand on its own. Even if you didn't have an attached press release, that pitch paragraph, that media messaging, missive right there needs to be able to stand on its own so that the media can look at it and say, okay, yeah, this is something given if the planets align and I have, the amount of time to cover it and the logistics work out for me, I would like to cover this pitch and cover this story, give coverage to this story. But you can say, below is the pitch. Now we can't attach it, to a media pitch. Because most newsrooms across the country have very, very tight, filters and things like that. So if you send any kind of attachment to unsolicited attachment to a pitch that's going to a newsroom, the good chances are that it's not even going to get to the newsroom. It's going to get blocked kind of thing. So, that's why we let them know, hey, we can get you additional information. And then they might come back to us and say, hey, I like this. You know what? Send me a pitch and the release and some photos or something like that, but send it to this secure email address that goes to, features@newyorktimes.com or something like that. So.
Okay, good. Okay, the next part over here is how do you find your targets? Who do you pitch to?
Well, that comes from just like I said before, media market research, and having been in the industry for 25 years, I've forged my own media list over the years of what media people that I call, or the media list that I call a hot list, and these are media outlets that I've worked with over the years, media contacts and media outlets that I've worked with over the years, and I can run stuff by them, by email. Sometimes I can pick up the phone and say, hey Jeff, what do you think about this kind of thing? So I have my own list there, but then we also do media market research through media databases that are out there, and we can find those whose editorial profile is a match to the client profile, the product profile, the venture profile, whatever that is. And then whether it's whether it's a radio show, a TV show, an internet site, hard copy magazine, a newspaper, an online newspaper, that type of thing. Find all those media contacts whose editorial profile, is a match to this. And then keep compile that list and that media list. And then, you can even go one step further, which solidifies a little bit is research. If you find Joe Jones at the Washington Post, then go research him a little bit and see what he's covered, in the past. Maybe he's covered this topic before. And that, so if that's the case, you don't want to make, sometimes clients will say, hey, this, the USA Today just did a story, yesterday on us, and we could have been in that story. That would have been a great one. Pitch that reporter and tell him to do a story on us too. So as you might imagine, that if we make that pitch, that reporter's going to say, Dan, I just covered that yesterday. Why would I cover it again kind of thing? So that's why when we pull up together the media market research, we also research those people that have that come up in their media research to see what they've covered in the past. Now, if they've covered something, if they cover the industry, that's great, and you can say, hey, here's something in your industry that, that you might be interested in covering. But if they've covered something that's very similar to what you have, that's when you have to get creative and come up with different news angles and say, I see that you've covered this in the past. Here's something that's a twist off that, that that I think your audience would be interested in too, kind of thing. So, but it comes down to researching. You can get online and do some things. If you, heck, you can get onto any media outlet's website, whether it's, you know, CNET or CBS or whatever, and a lot of times they'll have that contact information on there. I've been in the business long enough that I've forged that list myself, so that it's a little more seamless with PR firms that work with people all the time. But for what you're doing here, if you don't have access to a media database or your own hot list kind of thing, it will be, you know, labor intensive to go find those media people. But you can certainly, you know, research and find those people that cover this topic and then make the pitches accordingly and say, I think this is something your audience will be interested in. So.
Okay, good. let's see, with your particular list, do you have a group that you pretty much know, again, at this stage, you know a lot of their targets that they go after?
Sure.
And so then you... what percentage of your contacts at this stage would be existing relationships versus sort of new targets?
It really depends on the media, that particular media message, or that new campaign kind of thing. If it's clients that I've worked with, you know, we do a lot of new product launches and things like that. So if it's somebody that I've worked with at, Randy at Real Simple, who likes to cover innovative new home products and things like that, I can send her a quick email and say, hey, Brandy, here's another one. What do you think? And she'll say, yeah, that looks good. In fact, I got a spot for it next month. Something opened up. Thanks. I'll run it rolling in there. Or sometimes it can be, yeah, we just covered this kind of thing, but I'd like to cover that again. So give me, you know, let's cover that next quarter kind of thing in their editorial lead time kind of thing. So you can, depending on how what the pitch is, some of them are media. Now, I certainly don't know every media person in the world, and I don't, and I'm always forging new relationships. In fact, this morning I came up with a new contact at Bloomberg Business Week that I've never worked with before, and we struck up a conversation on some things, and we may be working together on a client pitch moving forward here. So it's an ongoing process of forging these new relationships, and then sometimes I'll help a media person, even if it's not a client of mine. They might ping me and say, they know that I've been in the business long enough that they'll ping me and say, hey, I'm working on a story on this. I'm looking for three companies that have, you know, worked with Japanese companies in the last, you know, couple of years. Do you have any clients like that? And if I don't, I'll, what I call feed the media bear, I'll go out and find something for them to help them. I said, you know, hey, Bob, I don't have any clients like this, but I'd be happy to help, you know, help find something for you. Let me ping my people, my associates, or and see if I can find something for you. And then if you do find something, then they say, and you help them with the story, and it's really not self-serving at all, but you're helping them. Then next time we make a pitch for our client, he says, oh, that's Todd at Spread the News. He helped us with that pitch when I was in the lurch kind of thing. Let's roll him in there kind of thing. So to answer your question, I do have a lot of contacts that I can pick up the phone and call and say, hey, here's something new, or just email them and say, hey, here's another one kind of thing. But it's also, you know, making pitches to people that I've never heard of, you know, before, but I found them online or found them in our research, and hey, this guy looks like he would be a good person to cover this business topic or this, you know, cover this health topic or that type of thing. So
now, should we use an email message or should we use a phone call?
Now, I mean, you're going to get about 1.2% of the media people out there will even accept a phone call kind of thing. You know, everybody says, no, you got to be a badger about it, and you got to go at it, and you got to, you know, pick up the phone and call them. No media person in the world, shouldn't say no. A microscopic fraction of, you know, of the media want to get pitched by the phone. Now they might call you and say, hey, I got your email. Can we talk about this a little bit? But on initial pitch, nobody wants you to call. And then he picks up the phone and says, you know, New York Times newsroom, and you start in on your pitch. Nobody wants that. So the overwhelming majority and the most successful pitches start with a really, like I said before, a really concise media missive, email missive that just says, again, here's something I think you might be interested in. And it needs to be, for the media to bite on it, I always say, we don't want to pitch. Everybody thinks egocentric. Like I said before, look how great we are. Look how much, look how many clients we have. Look how great our new product is and things like that. Nope. Media don't care how great you are. You know, like I said before, so they don't want to hear an egocentric pitch. They want to hear what I call a media centric pitch. Don't pitch me egocentric. They don't care about you. They want to care. They care about, again, why would my, you know, audience care about this kind of thing? So play it up in those respects. Put yourself in that media chair. If, you know, you're pitching to them, you know, to their audience, their end user kind of thing. So keep superlatives to a minimum. They don't care how, you know, they don't know. There should not be an exclamation point in your media pitch. That there shouldn't be, you know, a bunch of, you know, hyped, you know, superlatives and things like that. I always say pitch facts, not fireworks. They want, you know, they want the nuts and bolts of it is. They don't want a bunch of, you know, balloons and confetti and that type of thing. They want boom, boom, boom. Tell me what this is, why I would be interested and why I should cover it, kind of thing. So, media centric, not egocentric, facts, not fireworks.
Okay, in an email, so most of this is all 99% approximately is being done by email. What kind of a subject, when you even want to pitch it, how do you write your subjects?
You mean the subject line?
Yeah, for the email.
Yeah, that needs to be pretty concise and tight too. Sometimes I'll say, it depends on what the media person is. If it's somebody I know, I can say, hey Jeff, story idea. Boom, you know, and then go from there. But then some other media people, that when you're pitching other media people who maybe haven't worked with you or something like that, you got to be pretty specific in the media. Don't try and be cute or kind of dupe them and say, you know, that type of thing. Because if they click on it, if they think it's a story idea in your subject line, and then they click on it and it's, well, this isn't what I thought it was, you're going to get blacklisted pretty quick. Media people are not afraid to blacklist somebody who's pitching them if they're wasting their time. They have very short attention spans, like I said before. So we got to get them what they need and make it a greased rail, the easiest way for them to do something moving forward. So it needs to be sometimes it'll catch their attention if you can put their name, you know, like John. You know, dash story idea, you know, elephants can now run in the Kentucky Derby. Boom. You know, and then cover that. And then, oh, that's interesting. Or it can't be, typically we try to keep that subject line, under 30, between 30 and 35 characters, pretty tight. The shorter, the better, kind of thing. Watch out for trippy words that like the word free in a headline will go straight to a spam filter. Offer, you know, anything that sounds kind of spammy kind of thing. Again, no exclamation points. Don't put in a don't hit caps lock and type it, because that's going to look like a spam, and that's going to go straight to a spam filter too. So just make it look conversational. That's why I always say that works the best. The media, they're in the job of telling stories and conversating and educating and entertaining, like I said. So make sure that headline is conversational. John, so it grabs their attention, and they know that you spent some time to put together John's story idea or story pitch or article idea, article lead, you know, story tip, you know, that type of thing. And then three or four, you know, maybe five, six, eight words on what the topic is. But again, be careful that you don't that the words that you're using aren't hype and aren't going to trip filters, because there's a lot of filters out there more and more these days. I mean, I can pitch something to a client or a media person and then maybe follow up with them and say, hey, what do you think about that pitch? And then say, well, I, ne- I never even got it, and he'll say, let me check, and oh, that went to my spam filter. Oh, it looks like it didn't like the word whatever or something like that. It tripped it, and then he'll have to whitelist it or something like that. So, it is a delicate dance kind of thing, but it's trial and error. You got to get it out there and see what works, and then not be afraid to be malleable and change things in the course of the campaign to generate as many hits as we can. So.
Okay. Todd, I have a question. If we want to build ourselves as a resource to, specific kinds of people, journalists, whatever, is that a separate campaign? Like, we have a lot of resource in the business valuation, financial planning, lead generation. So is that something we would do as almost a separate campaign? Like, how would we let people know that we're a resource? Would we combine that with
the pitch? Now, what I would do is, when we do that, that's what we call expert branding in a media message. And in that situation, your expertise becomes the product, so to speak. So you guys we play up, hey, Mr. Editor, Ms. Producer, here's an expert resource, interview resource, that we'd like to kind of spoon feed to you, that you can use in your features moving forward. I call them Rolodex releases where, or Rolodex pitches where it's just, we're actually educating you, the media, as to who you are, and searing you into their minds as to, here's an expert interview resource. Whether you're doing something tomorrow or a year from now, if you're ever covering the topic of tax law and you need someone to speak to, we have here's a great expert for you. Articulate. We can get you data. We can get you story ideas. And that, like I said before, if you can pitch a media person a story idea, avail them an expert resource, give them data, and we can even get you, a photo of this, or we can give you, here's some graphs, that type of thing. You've done 80% of their work for them. And that's the chances of getting media exposure, if you make the media's job easy, go up exponentially when you do that. So if you can expert brand, play up what you guys, your expertise, who you are and what you do, and here's why we would be of benefit to you. And then it's kind of a seeding of the cloud, media clouds. You get it out there and you say, and sometimes it's an active pitch where they bite on it and say, hey, thanks for sending me this. I want to run something on this tomorrow or next week kind of thing. Most of the time they take it, and that's why I call it a Rolodex release. They'll take it and put it in there, what they call the future file, and say, this is great. Thank you very much. I know, as a matter of fact, in our editorial calendar in November, we're doing a story on tax law, so I'm going to circle back to you then kind of thing. But at this point, I don't know how much media pitching and things you've done, but at this point the media don't know you exist. And so we need to change that by pitching the media market and, again, seeding the media clouds and letting them know, okay, here's an expert resource on this topic, specifically moving forward. And again, and if you're ever looking for story ideas, we can help you on stories on bullet point 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here's some story ideas. If those are of interest, let us know. And that's a great thing to do for an expert, people who are experts on a topic, because then they come back to us, whether it's a breaking news type thing that happens or, hey, this happening current events. Let's do a follow-up story on this, and let's interview those guys that Todd's been pitching us that we have in the future file here. So,
sure.
A question on follow-up. Yeah. Follow-up email. Do you
What's
a
that?
Follow-up? You send this into them, and then do you ever do a follow-up?
Oh yeah. We make lots and lots of follow-ups, and it's. And you got to be careful. Like I said before, it's kind of a delicate dance. You got to make sure you don't blur the lines between help and hinder kind of thing. I'm always amazed how we can be pitching a campaign. I basically relaunch the campaign, any given campaign, about every 10 days in a campaign. We'll launch and get it out there, and then kind of take a breath. Maybe tweak the media message a little bit, add some new, do some new media research, and then go back again and hey, here's, pitch this, here's a follow up to what I sent you last month, a couple weeks back, that type of thing. And I'm always amazed that we could be on follow up number 5 or number 9, and a media person will say, Todd, I got your email this morning. Thank you so much. I realize it's June. I know you've been pitching this to me since January. I haven't had time to do it. Your follow-up hit me at the perfect time. We want to run something, next week. Can I talk to your client on Friday kind of thing? And that wouldn't happen if you didn't follow up. Now, some media will say, ideally, right up front, not interested in this topic, Todd. What else you got? you know, kind of thing. And some of them will just say, you know what, I'm not on this beat anymore. I'm now covering, you know, pets. So don't pitch me on this topic anymore. So it's a perpetual updating of the media, research list that we have. But yeah, we do follow up often. And it's, but it's not a, you gotta be careful, like I said, not to get in there, in their way kind of thing. We're looking to help them, not get in their way. And it's about the media centric to them, not to us. So.
And what pitch changes when you do a follow up? Like if you're doing five follow ups, one a month for 5 months, is it completely different? Is it a slight twist? It's, you know, one other angle.
Well, that's a good question, because sometimes clients will say, I want to launch a press release every month for the next 5 months. And I say, no, you don't. If you do that and you make a pitch to a media person in, you know, once a month or every 3 weeks or every 5 weeks or whatever, that media person that you pitched on January 1st, in some situations hasn't even seen that pitch yet. You know, they might not even have gotten to it yet. And now in month number two, you're pitching me another one, a different, completely different angle. And in three, they don't want more pitches. They want more concise, story ideas kind of thing. So the media pitch, to answer your question, the media pitch that we might send on January 1st, it can be tweaked just a little bit on when we follow up, you know, 10 days later or whatever, 12 days later, and just say, you know, maybe a couple lines change, or if there is something new that you've, you know, hey, since we talked to you last kind of thing, here's some additional information. That works well, because the media will say, okay, this isn't just he's not just re-puking this back to me kind of thing. Since I talked to you last, this has changed. Here's some new additional information, or since we talked to you last, I need, you know, in the news, this has happened. That plays right into this news peg kind of thing. And so it's a tweak, you know, moving forward. It's not completely different. If you pitch something that's completely disparate from what you pitched 2 weeks ago, they're going to say, dude, I haven't had a chance to see this, the first pitch, and now you're sending me the second one. And now my eyes are spinning and brain's going, I don't have time to cover this. You're giving them a reason to hit delete, and you don't want to do that. So.
Now, what about the signature? Is there something even that basic within an email as to how you come across? I mean, your tone sounds really conversational, just sort of like directly straight to the point.
Yeah, I mean, the signature itself can be, you know, it doesn't need to be, and that's the other thing too, that this needs to be a text-based media pitch. I know everybody's got these programs that put together these HTMLs, and we can do this, and look at, I can make color here, and let's make this line blue, and this isn't ad copy. This isn't marketing copy. This is email copy. It needs to be basic text-based. Again, facts, not fireworks. Just don't put together some PR newsrooms will block HTML. Just so it needs to be just a text-based boom, boom, boom kind of thing. And so to answer your question about the signature box, it just needs to say basically just information. They don't want to see your tagline, your ad logo, or your, you know, marketing the tagline that you have, you know, that's not what they're looking. You're not pitching the ad department. You're not pitching the marketing department. You're pitching the newsroom. So the tagline can just be, Ted Finch, email address, phone number. Because ideally you've said, you've explained to them what, you know, in the media messaging above, here's what it is, here's what it does. They're not going to look, you know, they don't want to look down below and see that your signature line is nine lines long and it's got a website link here, and here's this, and here, go to our Dropbox page here, and go here for our, you know, Google Drive or whatever like that. It needs to be, again, the less characters that the media eye has to see, the more easily they're going to embrace it and be able to click on it. So it doesn't need to be anything fancy at all.
Okay. And how do you measure success of a campaign?
It depends from client to client. It really depends. I mean, some clients, clearly the more media exposure, the better, the more media hits, the better kind of thing. And so, sometimes clients will say, You know, we just, well, it depends on if the client says, we just want to make sales. You know, if, you know, I don't care where we get the exposure, how many hits we get, but if we get sales. So if we could generate, you know, 5 hits for a client and the client says, holy crap, we can't answer the phone quick enough. We can't keep up with the sales kind of thing. And they're happy with that. Then that's successful kind of thing. So it, and then there's other times where we generate, you know, a ton of media exposure. But for some reason, maybe it didn't, translate to sales because what's out of the realm of what we're pitching is the media acceptance of price point or something else within that. So we can get as much exposure as we can, but if the consumer on the back end or on the receiving end sees it and maybe they click on it and say this is interesting, but by the time they get through it and get down to the bottom, I don't want to spend $69 on that. I was thinking, you know, I was hoping to spend, you know, $29 on it, and they don't purchase, but we get a bunch of media exposure for them, then that isn't, as far as generating hits, that's great. We generated success, but in my mind, the success equals happy client, and that typically comes from we wanted to get as many sales as we could, and it was great to get this media exposure, but for some reason it didn't translate into sales. So I can't guarantee that if we get you into the USA Today that you'll sell X amount of product or you'll have X amount of new clients or that type of thing. So it really depends on the client as to, you know, what success is for them. Boy, we launched this campaign and we were trying to get increased sales by 18%, but we only increased them by 16%, or they say we increased them by 42%, so it was great kind of thing. So success, in my mind, I'm sure we generate as many hits as we can. That's always the goal. The more you get, the more you pitch, the more you get kind of thing. But as far as success, that really comes down to the client as to did the media hits that we generated, did it translate into sales because you guys had everything in place? The pricing was right. The sales vehicle, you know, fulfillment vehicle on the website was made it seamless for somebody to buy. I mean, there's been times when we've generated a lot of media exposure for a client. And like I said, it just didn't translate into sales for some reason. And, come to find out it was because, I got on the website and it took me too long to buy that thing. And so I just clicked off kind of thing. So that doesn't have anything to do with the media exposure that we generated. It has to do with, you know, on the front end. So I always say just make sure you have everything in place that's ideal, with, you know, price point and things like that and sales fulfillment and things like that. And then the media exposure, if that's all set in place and right, boy, media exposure is gas on a fire from there. So.
Okay, good. And then how do you typically track it?
There's a couple of different things you can do. You can pay for a clipping service to track things, and they'll what a clipping service is they're basically a service set up to basically read as many media outlets as possible, whether it's a newspaper or several years ago everything was just clearly hard copy, so they read every newspaper in print, and then they'd track magazines and they'd track they'd literally read all these, and then they'd send you the hard copy of that actual article that ran in Time magazine. You know, here's 3 pages from Time magazine, here's when it ran, here's the column inches it was, and then they'd do an evaluation as to the ad equivalency of that. It had you purchased, this is a 3-page ad, you know, article in Time magazine. If you purchased a similarly sized ad, a 3-page ad in Time magazine, it would have cost you, you know, X amount kind of thing. And, as you might imagine, a full page ad in Time magazine is, I don't even know, it used to be well over $100,000 kind of thing. So, that's just how you kind of figure out, that's how you can track that way through a clipping service. Or there's other things online that you can certainly do, just frankly, a Google alert. Just type in your those types of things, the company name, or maybe if there's a specific campaign that you're doing. There's another couple things you can research these online. There's another one that I like called Talkwalker, all one word. I believe it's .org. And believe it or not, they sometimes do a better job than Google alerts. I know they're quicker. And you just, in that situation, you go in and you type in your keywords and then say, send it to this email address, and then they'll scour things. And so I'll get up, come into the office in the morning, and boom, there's 6, 8, 10, 12, 25 TalkWalker alerts and go through there, and then you get a link to the article and that type of thing from there. So it's just, you can scour the internet and find those types of things, or sometimes media, if they're if you have a good relationship with them, they'll say, hey, I can, like this morning, we just landed a hit in USA Today that's running tomorrow. And the guy, reporter that I'm working with said, give me your address. We'll send you a copy of it, kind of thing. And I said, well, I appreciate the offer for the hard copy, but I'd just like a link to it, before it runs. That's what my client is looking for, not necessarily the hard copy. And he said, oh, okay. And so he sent me the link, right beforehand. So you can ask, if you're working with the media person, you can ask them for it. But I will say, just be prepared that I was going to say 90% of the time, but it's probably 80% of the time, the media will say, if you say, hey, can you send me a copy of that article that you ran on my client? They'll say, not my job. I wrote the article. My job is to write the article. It's your job to track it down, kind of thing. Or they'll say, and it is, they're right. Or they'll say, talk to the circulation department or talk to archives. They'll get you a copy and, they'll charge you X amount of money for it, kind of thing. Now, going back real quickly on a clipping service, they're expensive. You can get, like, Cision has a clipping service, Burrell's Loose, not Burrell's Loose, what's the other one? I'm drawing a blank right now. It's the ones that you follow, just clipping service. They are expensive. They charge you a good chunk of change per month just to track for you, and then they'll charge you per hit that they find for you too. So they might charge you, $600-$800 a month to do something to track, and then every time they get a hit for you, we're going to charge you $3.95 per hit, or sometimes for broadcast hits, they're even more expensive than that. Here's the link that we found that ran at KTLA in LA, the TV station there. Here's the information. If you want a copy of it, we can get it for you, but it's going to be $175, kind of thing. So it is expensive to do tracking. So you can do it online and find out where it's been. But as far as getting the hard copy, if you will, of that media hit, the actual tape of the store of the thing, or the hard copy of that magazine article, the price goes up depending on what that clipping service can do for you.
Now, what should a company do with the positive press?
What I always tell clients, sometimes the press is secondary. If you can take the hit, I always call the media hit the ember, and then what you want to do is fan that ember into a flame with the media message, or with the once the hit happens, kind of thing. So if you get a hit, and like this USA Today article came in, he sent me the link. It's not running till tomorrow, so I'm not able to, we're not able to even open it till tomorrow. But once that does, you can then share it on your social media, whether it's, Facebook, Instagram, whatever, Snapchat, whatever, that type of thing, and get it out there and say, hey, here's an article that ran on us, and then share it, kind of thing, so it gets out. And try and turn it into a viral hit as much as you can. Now, I will say, too, and this is what Ted was talking about earlier, we can't – sometimes when a media hit happens, I say, don't put it on your website, and here's why. This might sound counterintuitive, but if we land a hit, this morning in Newsweek for you, and you take it and you put it on your website this afternoon, I'm continuing to make those pitches to the media and doing the media follow-ups and doing that way we talked about before. And if next week a reporter from Time magazine gets my pitch and says, oh, this is cool, yeah, I'd like to do this, he clicks on the website and goes to it, and right on the front page there it says, as seen in Newsweek, or clicks to the press page, and he goes to the press page and he sees that, there's all these previous media mentions. Media are very, very competitive. They're very fickle. They can be kind of caustic sometimes even. So, and they want to be first. They don't want to play second fiddle to anybody. They don't want to be, late to the dance, kind of thing. So if they see that, especially a competitor ran something, and it's right there in their face, and he clicked on it, it's like, hey, look, your competitor ran this. You're Johnny Come Lately and haven't covered this yet, kind of thing. They can click off and say, I don't want to cover this, kind of thing. So, again, we don't want to give them even the smallest inkling to not cover this, kind of thing. So I always say, let us, while we're actively pitching the media market, don't put these hits on your website. Now, you can put something on your social media and things like that. And any a media person could just Google, you know, and see what kind of coverage has XYZ company, you know, had, kind of thing. And sometimes I've had that happen where a media person will say, hey, I like this. Let me do a little research and get back to you. And then they come back and say, you know what? I did a Google search. I see that this has had a lot of coverage in the past. You know, I like to cover things, you know, fresh out of the gate, kind of thing. So thanks anyway. What else you got, kind of thing. So, but my point of saying that is when you get a hit, don't immediately slap it on your website while we're actively pitching a campaign, because that's going to prevent us from getting more media exposure moving forward, especially from their competitors. We can just let us kind of plant the seeds and wait for the germination time of those media hits to happen. And then, you know, down the road a little bit, then you can start kind of sprinkling those hits onto the website as we've already generated, you know, a bunch of hits, and we have some pending hits happening too. That's something that a lot of people don't know about. They think I'm going to put all these media hits on my website, and that's going to get me more media exposure. And frankly, that has the opposite effect, because the media are competitive, and if they see that lots of other media have covered you beforehand, they'll say, well, I'm going to cover something else that hasn't been covered ad nauseum, kind of thing.
Now, what are the most common titles of the people that you contact? We noticed in the media list, there's a publication, it's got the editor-in-chief, it's got the editor, it's got the writer. How do you know which one, and what is the most common?
Yeah, that varies per media outlet or per media context. Sometimes I can pitch, there's two different kind of schools of thought, or two different newsroom protocols, I guess. Some media outlets are, okay, the editor comes up with the story ideas and assigns them to the reporters or the writers, that type of thing, and say, okay, we got this pitch. Bob, I want you to cover this part of it, and I want Sally to cover this part of it, and put a story together on it, kind of thing. That's pitching the editorial side, kind of thing. And then there's other media outlets that say they put the onus of story generation on staff. And so that means, like, when I was a reporter at the TV station here in town, I was actually the producer of the newscast, and so we put together the newscast. But I told my reporters that were out there and the other anchors and stuff, you got to come to me with story ideas every day, because we have to cover, you know, we need 22 and a half minutes of news coverage here. So go out and find stories for me. Come bring them back to me, and we'll say, yeah, we're not going to cover that, or, hey, I like that story, let's cover that, and let's do this with it, kind of thing. So to answer your question, some media outlets will want their staff to come up with ideas, and then they pitch it to the editor. Hey, Mr. Editor, here's the story I came up with, and yeah, I like that. And other media outlets will be editing starts on the editorial side, and then they assign from there. So what I do to combat that or to address that is I pitch both. Nobody's going to say, you know, they might say, you know, I've had media people say, you know what, you don't have to pitch me anymore because I don't actually make these decisions. You need to pitch my editor. Here's his email address, kind of thing. Or there's some media people that might say, hey, I got this. I actually don't come up with the ideas, so I'm going to forward this on to my editor, kind of thing. So pitch the reporter, pitch the writer, and the producer, you know, or anchor, if that's applicable. But then don't be afraid also to pitch, you know, the editor, you know, that type of thing. Now, I will say editor-in-chief, don't pitch the editor-in-chief of the Wall Street Journal. Don't pitch the editor-in-chief of you know, Inc. magazine or you know, USA Today, that type of thing. They're almost they're in charge of the newsroom and the things like that, but very rarely does an editor-in-chief assign things. There's editors underneath there, whether it's an executive editor or a supervising editor or just the main editor, managing editor, that type of thing. But if you can get kind of middle management, that's kind of the best, if you will, is get them, because if you get too far up the editorial food chain, they don't, you know, they're almost working, you know, half administration, you know, or 60% administration, 40% editorial. And if you pitch them, you know, they're not going to, you know, take it and even forward it on to some people. Now, having said that, I have some media contacts that have, you know, that are, at bigger magazines that say, hey, I got this. I'm going to send this to my, you know, my exec editor, and he's going to, see if he can assign it out, kind of thing. So to answer your question in a long-winded way, I pitch the editors and producers and writers on the low end that say, hey, here's a story idea for you, and then pitch the editors too. And if you're pitching the editors, I always say, you know, feel free to forward this on to one of your staffers who might be interested in covering, you know, this topic kind of thing. And then they'll let you know too. Sometimes they'll say, hey, I'm going on vacation in 2 weeks, so I'm not going to cover this, but you know what? I'm going to send this to Bob, who's going to be covering for me while I'm gone, kind of thing. So.
Okay. What are the typical lead times?
That ranges, runs the whole gamut. I mean, on online media thing, I can pitch something this morning, and if I catch lightning in a bottle, they can run something this afternoon. If it's a, you know, timely and topical, that type of thing, that doesn't happen very often at all. I always like to say editorial lead times range from 6 weeks to 6 months. You know, that's kind of a general-ish type thing. The bigger the media outlet, the bigger the lead time. The slower media or smaller media can be, I always liken it to, you know, a smaller media outlet like a blog or something like that, or maybe even a local newspaper that has, you know, 25 followers as opposed to the Wall Street Journal that has, you know, millions. They can respond more quickly. And so I call them quick twitch and slow trudge. The big elephants, like the big media, they have this slow trudge where it kind of takes the media a little bit, you know, takes some time to quite frankly see it because they get pitched so much. And so that's kind of the slow trudge of the big media. And the smaller media can be a little more quick twitch, and they can see it more often and respond more quickly and run something. So that's why when we do make a campaign pitch, some PR people, and I don't know why for the life of me, will pitch, they'll pick a media format and, okay, for this month, we're going to pitch magazines and just magazines and high-end magazines or, you know, top-tier magazines. And then next month, we're going to pitch, you know, newspapers and things. Well, all of them have different lead times, you know, weird lead times, but they're timing it to try and get it, you know, get the things to happen all at once. Well, you don't want to, you don't want a flash fire. You want a controlled burn in a media campaign. So that's why we pitch the entire media campaign in a campaign, the entire media market with short lead times and long lead times at the same time. Because as we're waiting for those slow trudge media, the big heavy slow moving media to respond, it might take them 3 months, 4 months, 6 months to respond or actually get the article from initial interest to hard placement. We're snagging these quick twitch media, and we're sustaining ourselves with those smaller hits. You know what I mean? To get to while we're waiting for the slow trudge media to respond. So that way things are happening on kind of a ramp up, as opposed to, you know, they time it where we're going to do this, and so the media, let's pitch the media long lead media first, and then the short term media, you know, later on, and then everything happens and lands within a 6 day period of time. And then you get lost. Everything gets lost in the din of that whirlwind kind of thing. So again, let's work on a controlled burn where we get the slow burn that happens and fanning those embers into flames too. And that way we're taking advantage of editorial lead times to our advantage, because we're getting the media, the quick twitch media to respond while we're waiting for that slow trudge to happen.
I have a quick question about building relationships. It sounds like you've built some relationships. Does that just happen over time? Do you do any relationship building in these quick media pitches?
Yeah, that too. And then it used to be twice a year I would send just a pitch out to you know, media research people or media people and just say, hey, here's who I am. Here's what I do. Here's typically who my clients are. I'd like to make your job as easy as possible. And again, that's the way to best get media exposure, and just say, if I can help you with a pitch or with an article or a feature or a segment, TV segment moving forward, I'd be more than happy to, you know, if you're ever looking for somebody, a resource, ping me. I'm happy to help you. Or this is who I am. This is what I do. This is my client base. If you're ever covering that type of thing, or would you ever be interested in covering that type of stuff? And that's when I can kind of update my media too. So I'm pitching somebody who covers automotive and say, hey, George, here's, you know, I'd like to work with you kind of thing. Here's what I cover. And he might come back and say, oh, I just, you know, like I said before, I just switched beats. I'm not covering automotive anymore. I'm covering, you know, pets, you know, and then you make the media research from there. So it, I do ping the media at least once a year. It used to be twice a year, but now that the media has, I've kind of done it so often that I can only do it, you know, I can do it once a year and get away with it just because I've pinged them enough over the years. But I definitely do go after, try and forge relationships with media and just say, hey, here's who I am, here's what I do. And again, that pitch is definitely media-centric. It's not, hey, this is Todd from Spread the News. Look how great I am. I've been working with clients for 25 years, and I land hits all the time. They don't give a crap about that, you know. They want to know, how can you help me, kind of thing. So if you can do that, and I've had media people say, every time I make that pitch, there's a handful of media that say, I wish every single PR person in the world would see this and do this to me. This is exactly what PR people should do. Thank you so much. I'm going to put you in my Rolodex, and I'm going to ping you. And you'd be surprised. I get an email or a phone call from somebody saying, hey, Todd, this is, you know, Bob from the San Francisco Chronicle. We traded emails back, you know, a couple weeks back when you sent me that thing out. I'm actually working on a story now, and I need your help. What can you do for me, kind of thing? And that's, sure. that goes a long way as far as, you know, building relationships with the media. They're very loyal. They're very, they'll get rid of you quick, but if you hack them off, but if you can help them, they hang on to you with white-fisted gold, as white-fisted gold. So,
and do you do and that makes sense. Do you do anything to build relationships, talk to them, have a conversation anywhere outside of what you're really helping them with? Like, how do you nurture that relationship over time? Or is it more sending those things, staying top of mind, letting them know you can help you? But like, do you build deeper relationships with these guys or not?
I mean, I have media contacts that I've forged over the years that I can, you know, call, and chat. Hey, what do you think about this? Sometimes I can ping them with a pitch that's not even along their beat, but I know I respect their opinion and stuff. And, hey, Jeff, you know, I'm sending this out, and I'm not really crazy about my end result here. Am I on the right path here? And send it to them, and they'll say, ah, this is good. But you know what? I wouldn't say that. Or you know what? I would play that up. I even, you know, put paragraph one, you know, down at number three and put three in number one. I would play up that kind of thing, but I don't, I don't go to media events and things like that, but it is just kind of a online, social meeting kind of thing. Make sure that they have what they need. And also when I get done with a pitch and a client has, or a media person has run a story on a client, I always go back to them and thank them and say, you know, this, you know, thank you very much, and I'm going to share this, and I'm going to hashtag you and help, you know, that type of thing. And they want to see that, because if their editors see that, wow, John's story that ran last week got, you know, 70,000 followers in 24 hours, or 700,000 followers in 24. They like, you know, clearly they like that. They like the more eyes and ears that, you know, connect with their stories, kind of thing. But then I'll follow up with them and say, hey, you know, thank you for doing the story. And then in that situation too, I'll say, as I'm signing off now, let's work, I'd be happy to work. Can't wait to work together again too. As a matter of fact, what are you working on now where I can help you? And then you have them there. They know they've got a relationship, with them. And the thing is too, real quick, unfortunately, in the media game or PR game, I was going to say 90%, but it's probably higher than that. 92-95% of the PR people in the world have no clue how the media works. Now they know the basics or the mechanics kind of thing, but a lot of them, you know, just do it wrong. And so the media have a love-hate relationship with PR people, just because the overwhelming majority of them make their job harder, you know, not easier. When I was a producer, you know, we'd get pitches from sometimes it always seemed like the bigger the PR firm, the more mistakes they made, it seemed like, and they didn't make it easy for them. So if you can, again, make it easy for them to do, they don't care, you know, about your intentions, or they care about, you know, their audience kind of thing. So if you can make their job easier, that's what it comes down to. But so my point is that there's a lot of PR people out there that, media people out there that don't like PR people. So if they can find a media person, like I said before, PR person that they like, who gets it, thank you so much for pitching this to me. I wish all my pitches from PR people look like this. You're always great about getting me, you know, answering, getting back to me right away, that type of thing. I had one guy say a couple of years ago, you know, you're screwing up the curve for the whole PR industry. He said, this isn't how PR people work. He said, I'm supposed to make a response, and then you're supposed to get back to me late, and then I'm supposed to make another response because you sent me the wrong photos and things. He said, you know, I respond to you, and then you get me stuff what I need right away. You're screwing up this whole thing kind of thing. It was tongue in cheek and laughing kind of thing, but his point was that there's a lot of PR people out there that make our jobs way, way harder than they need to be. So if you can make their job easy for them, you're going to be very popular.
Yeah, Todd, this is one of the reasons why my daughter's a journalism major. I even told her, I said, all of my best PR people, like Katie Dunn and like Brenda with Goldmine. I mean, they, when I went to the CATS conference, the old Comdex one, where you go there and it's just the press. I remember talking with the editor-in-chief of Computer Reseller News, and I said, I'm looking for a new PR person. Who would you recommend? He said, there's Katie Dunn over there. Here's Brenda over here. Brenda was my former head of PR, and Katie's the one I hired to launch Netscape and American Online. So, and I said, what's the difference? They said, they're all journalists. They're part of our group. They're the inside crowd. They received all the crap from all the PR people. That's the way he described it.
That's it. He's right.
He said, all I ever got from the PR was promotional this.
Yep.
You know, everything looked like it was an ad. And the journalism majors, those that were actually in on the receiving end of this, they just pitched stories. Yep. You know, you could tell real difference, or that you could tell the difference really quick.
Oh yeah. And that's why I said before, make sure that you put yourself in that media chair. And that's where it does help to have media experience too, that you put yourself in there and take yourself out of the mind of a PR person almost, and just say, okay, what is a story? A story is the telling of news. It's not the hyping, and the hyperbole and fluff. It's news. And so make it a news pitch. That's why it's called it used to be called a news release, and then they went to press release, and press and news are kind of, they're not the same thing kind of thing. So, or exposure can be different, kind of thing. So anyway, the best PR people, are typically, former media people or media people, PR people that get that the media, you know, what the media are doing and what their job is. And it's not about fluff. It's about, you know, the finished product kind of thing. So
now a couple of little small questions. The last ones, what is your typical schedule? What does your schedule look like? Like you walk into the office and tell me when you're starting a campaign, because I know it's like a machine. That's the way I always describe it. Cause I just always remember the times when, you know, we've had quote PR people working on the press, hardly got anything. We then hired you, and it was like this machine and this wall of press that was just coming at us. What's your schedule look like?
It's a matter of just, again, you have to be pretty meticulous about keeping track, because there's a lot of stuff coming and going. And so you put together, you know, I'll get here early in the morning. First thing I do every morning is, you know, research the hits that have happened and overnight or in the last, you know, 12 hours, 18 hours or whatever kind of thing. And then, you know, research, send those to the clients, and then, you know, make sure that we're doing, again, taking that, fanning that ember into a flame from there. But as far as actually launching a campaign on any given day, you know, we'll come up with the media market research and have the media message in place and approved by the client. And then we'll marry those two together and get it out to the media. And it can be a email pitching, or like I said, there's sometimes I can pick up the phone and call somebody, a handful of people. Believe it or not, I have probably less than five, but I have my wife laughs at me because I still have a fax machine. And she said, why do you have that? And I said, believe it or not, I have some media people that say, if you send me a fax, I'll see it. You send me an email, and it's going to get buried in, you know, with the other 5,000 press releases that are coming in. You send me a fax. And that I don't give out my fax number to everybody, but I like you, you know, kind of thing. You send me a fax that comes up right next to my desk here. I'll look at it. So I send, and I think there's only probably three or four that I send to, and some of them are, I haven't worked with in a while because they cover different beats. But anyway, my point of saying that is that's knowing what the media, you know, what their media preference is. I might put together a campaign and I know that John likes his faxes or his pitches by email on Tuesdays before 10 o'clock. And that's what you find in the media market research is, you know, what they cover, you know, what the pitch points they like to bite on, and then the media, the actual transaction, the mechanics of getting that media missive to them. How do they like it? Some of them like it by email, on a specific day. Some of them just said, send it to me, whatever. I'm always looking at, you know, always looking at emails, and some of them like it on a specific day, or I'm off at 3 o'clock every day. Anything you send to me after 3 o'clock, I'm not going to see for the next, you know, 24 hours kind of thing. But it is a machine. You know, it's kind of getting it together.
What CRM system do you use, by the way?
What's that?
What kind of a system? Do you use a CRM system or something? What do you use, mechanic?
No, I don't use that's the thing too. You, like a Constant Contact or a Chimp, MailChimp or anything like that, those will get blocked by me, email, newsroom systems and things like that. So a lot of it's direct pitching. I do have a software system that I've had built for me years ago, that will allow me to send a chunk of media, at the same time, or media messages at the same time, but I don't, it isn't a spamming or a shotgun approach kind of thing. If I know I'm sending a pitch to a handful of media people in the TV thing, I can put it in there, and that'll allow me to send out a handful of media at the same time, as opposed to individually pitching media person. But the best media hits that we get are typically direct pitches. You know, I kind of have a funky little way of thinking that if I'm spending the literal energy of typing a person's name, John, and getting it to them, I'm actually, you know, trying to connect with them, not to be too existential or esoteric or whatever, but if I'm doing that, I'm spending energy and getting it out there. Yeah. And it's not just a let's kind of halfway putting it together and then let's just throw it against the wall and see who bites. If you can have intention to it and write something out to somebody and say, hey, this is what I think, you know, you might bite on. And again, making it easy for them. So we send out a lot of stuff, and it's a lot of pitching going out, and it's kind of a never ending, you know, type thing. It's pitch and digest, restart and keep going, and pitch till the media tell us to go away kind of thing. So.
And how many pitches a day will you make? Like when you're in the middle of a campaign, is it 10 or 20, 100?
How many pitches that will I write in a day?
Yeah, like how many emails will you send? Oh, you're doing most of this by email. How many email pitches a day will you do in the heat of a campaign?
Hundreds. I mean, just like it's nonstop. Now, like I said, I can if I'm going, maybe I'm pitching a segment, an idea that I think would work for the Today Show, and I have, you know, six or eight different producers that I work with at the Today Show that might bite on something, and somebody covers the morning show, somebody covers the third hour, that type of thing. I might put that into a, you know, into my kind of a BCC type email, you know, software type thing that goes out. But typically it's just that might go out to more than one people in one email, but then it's just kind of nonstop. It's looking at the media list and okay, send it to that one, send it to that one, keep going. To answer your question about how many in a day, I never really track them on a given day, but if I have my head down and we're launching a campaign for somebody, it's, you know, from early in the morning till later than my wife would like, in there, you know, working hard and just making pitches, but it's hundreds a day. Yeah.
That's great.
And then mechanics wise, I think what I was asking is when you keep track of all of these people, do you have your own custom system? Do you use a spreadsheet? Do you use a, you know, Goldmine Act? You know, what kind of a system?
I kind of have a system in place. I use, I don't really keep track of, sometimes clients will say, okay, well, we'd like to see who you're pitching and what you said and what you, and I don't, frankly, I don't keep track of that. I don't keep track of hours, or I charge by the retainer, and it's, I don't charge by the hour. And so it's just, I always tell clients, I work till the work is done. I take a deep breath and I start over again kind of thing. And so it just keeps going. And so I don't keep track of, you know, a list of, like an Excel file or something like that, that says, okay, I pitched Joe at the New York Times at 10:30 on Thursday, and he responded on this day, and things, and you know, that, and then get that to the client so that they can see, okay, here's, I'm happy to let a client know, here's the media outlets we're pitching, but I'm very, very protective about my media contacts. I don't share even names or emails or things like that, as you might imagine. But I do keep, I have, we make a pitch and then somebody responds, in my email program, it's frankly just Outlook. It's nothing fancy. And I'll send that, move that over into their file and then, make sure that's been, that media request has been fulfilled and they have the sample that they requested. They have the photo that they requested. And then if I'm doing a follow up on that client for that client on any given day, I go in there and we'll into that file and then we'll start, sort, and I'll go back and hit all those media people who have expressed interest in doing something that hasn't turned into a hard copy, a hard placement yet, and just follow up with them again about every 10 days and just say, hey, Biff, you got what you need? Can I help you? What else, what else do you need? And they'll say, sometimes they don't respond just because, media are kind of funny. When they're in the hunt and gather mode, they give me what you need. Give me everything. And they're kind of rabid. And then once they have what they need and they know that they're not going to be working on that story because of editorial lead times for another month or something like that, they'll go, underground kind of thing. And you won't hear from them. And it's just because, again, that kind of falls back into, we screwed around and got them what they needed, everything they needed, on the front end, and they don't have to keep badgering this kind of thing. And so I've had media people say, well, no, you responded, you got me everything I need. I'm not working on this story for another 8 weeks. I said, I'm typically used to going after the PR person, and then they, the day before I'm going to run it, they still haven't got me photos. You got me everything I need up front, so there's going to be the deafening sounds of silence for the next 7 weeks until I actually write the article kind of thing. But I follow up, a lot to make sure they, they have what they need. And, sometimes it helps to do a follow up because it's kind of I'm always surprised what they say. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you sent something. I was going to write that last week and I got busy and didn't. I'm glad you reminded me. I'm going to work on that this afternoon. And by the way, I do need an extra photo. Can you send me that kind of thing? So it's all about media relations. It's all about, getting them what they need, making it easy for them. But to answer your question, I don't have like a big program that follows. You could probably do it that way, come up with an Excel file or some kind of, act or whatever and follow up or Google reports or do it that way. I don't, just because I have everything kind of, responses to the media sent off to the side in that client's Outlook file. And then, I do have the media research in a program. And so I'll, I'm going to do a follow up on that given day, boom, go back in there, get that media list out and then start pitching. And then I go down, okay, I hit this one. And so I know who I've pitched and when I've pitched.
Media list?
What's that?
What program do you use to keep your media list?
It's just the email. I have Outlook is what I use to keep, when the media messages as they come in and media responses and stuff like that. But I use Cision, which is a media outlet, a media database, but I also use some other media research tools. So it's kind of a conglomeration of a bunch of different media pitches or media lists and things like that.
So can you track and say, I sent this pitch already, so when you go back the next day, you know who you did? Like if you were doing hundreds a day, does the program you're using to keep your media let you figure out who you sent and who you didn't?
Oh, yeah. Because I can see in that list, the list that I have built, and okay, and I can go back, I can open up any media contact that I have right now and see what I just pit, what I've sent to them lately, and that, and some media people, if they're general, assignment media people, and I pitch them a lot of different things. Some media people I just pitch, twice a year, because maybe their niche is tight. But if it's a general interest media person who says, send me everything you got, I might not bite on it, but I want to see everything you got kind of thing, I can open up, Joe Johnson and see that, okay, here's what you've, here's the messages that you pitched to them, him in the last, month or 6 months or whatever, and here's what they bid on and things like that. So yeah.
And what's your feedback on things like Hero?
I like them. Those are media request services and Profnet. They're good. If you do use a Haro or a Profnet, that type of thing, the key to those is the speed. They The media that do that, they're on a first come, first serve kind of early bird gets the worm type thing. They put something out and say, hey, I'm working on a story. My deadline is tomorrow at 4 o'clock. I need to, you know, speak to somebody who's an expert on this or put together a product roundup. I need to see consumer electronics products for the bedroom. Or for the kitchen or something like that. And then you get it, the first people that get to them, they get the snag. So they're great. I love media request services. I've landed a lot of hits over the years by using them. The key is responding quickly and again, making it easy for them to do it. And answering their questions specifically in the horror report. Sometimes it'll say, hey, I need to speak to a dentist who works on, implants. And then some people, the biggest complaint the media on Haro is that you didn't read my media request. You sent me, I'm not looking to do a story on toothbrushes. I'm looking to do a story on implants and you didn't answer my questions that I had in there and you're wasting my time. So that goes back to, again, you're a PR person who's making my job as a media person harder. So, it's just, if you do use those, they're good, but make sure you follow the letter of the law within that media request and get them what they need. And if you do that and your source is a good one for them, your chances of getting, landing that hit is good. So.
Okay, good. Let's see. David, do you have other questions?
No, well, number one, thank you. It's been like a gold mine of fabulous information.
Oh, really, really valuable. Mackenzie, just a little while ago, I had to peel away to her class. But because we're recording this, she's going to go all the way through it.
Okay. I will let you know. I have a 2 o'clock, so I need to scoot here in like 4 minutes. Okay. So.
Okay, good, I had one quick question. I'm sorry. I just wanted to find out about analysts.
I'm sorry, say that again.
I just wanted to ask about analysts, like from Forrester and stuff.
Oh, yeah, I don't do that type of thing. That's just out. My end targets or end users, if you will, are specifically media outlets kind of thing. There are some media that on the IR side that might do that type of thing. I specifically don't have, experience with working with analysts and things like that. So.
Okay. Good. Gosh, you've been really, really helpful. I'll definitely make sure I do a blog and hike your name all over the place. So, but I always build you up and refer you whenever I've got clients. I don't always have them that are right down your market, but when I do, you just always do such a great job with them.
Well, I appreciate that. I always like working with your clients. So,
okay. Well, have fun. Thank you again so
much. Yeah. Thank you.
It's awesome. You bet. Good luck with the class and the internship.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.